Elizabeth Evans, and I'm a homeschooling mom of four young kids. I'm figuring this out as I go, but I'm here to talk to Bonnie, who has been writing and speaking on the subject for over a decade and has been homeschooling for three decades.
My name's Bonnie Landry. I've got seven kids. They're ages 13 to 33. I've been homeschooling for 29 years. I'm a wife, a mom, a grandma. I'm a speaker and a writer, and I'm an advocate of joy. So we're here to provide this podcast so that homeschooling can look like you imagined it to be. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so Elizabeth and I are meeting in the morning instead of evening.
So we have coffee instead of wine.
Well, actually, it's a hot elderberry syrup.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
I have this issue about coffee that my mom was a hardcore coffee drinker, didn't even get out of bed before she had a coffee. Uh-huh. And I thought, first of all, I didn't start drinking coffee till I was 40 something. And I thought, there's no way I'm ever going to be that person. So I always like to make sure I'm up for a couple of hours before I have a coffee.
Okay.
So yeah, it's just kind of a personal policy.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually can't do the caffeine in coffee. So I have to do decaf.
Okay.
And then a friend of mine introduced me to something called Dandy Blend, and it's dandelion and chicory root. And it almost tastes exactly like a cup of coffee.
Okay.
And you
use
can,
a pre-root thing occasionally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's really good, so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good to know. Put in the show notes.
Yeah. Right. I should link it.
My suggestions.
Right. Right.
Suggestions. Okay. So you have a question.
Yes. And yeah. I'm so excited about this topic. It speaks very near and dear to my heart. And usually I kind of summarize people's questions, but I think this time I want to read this word for word because I am assuming it will resonate with a lot of people.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, so this question is, hold on. I'm really struggling with not enjoying my boy right now. It feels like he's constantly doing things he shouldn't, not being helpful, and not telling the truth. On one hand, I think he would benefit from more attention from me, although he doesn't seem to really value our one-on-one dictation time like I thought he might. But also, having four children and a husband who travels very frequently for work, there's only so much individual attention I can give. And I think it would be prudent to say that I think a lot of us have felt this about one or more of our children at some point, and that we all have children that can be more challenging than others. And as adults, our expectation is almost to try and fit our kids into these boxes that society has created. And therefore, our children get frustrated, we get frustrated, and it's just an unhappy relationship.
And there's a lot of guilt that happens when we don't enjoy our children, right? There's a lot of guilt that happens because ultimately we think we should be enjoying our children. Mm-hmm. You know, and the truth of the matter is that some children are challenging most of their life, and all children are challenging sometimes, right?
Right.
So we will go through phases with all of our kids where we're not enjoying them, right? And there's guilt attached to that. So we have to kind of get past that. But I'm kind of excited about it too, because Elizabeth has been sharing with me, for our listeners, a book she's been reading by Sally Clarkson that sounds amazing. It's something that I would really love to read.
Yes.
And probably to my own kids. And so I think if you could speak to that book, because it sounds like it's a book that has really helped you along these lines, right? So
I'd really love
to hear a little bit more detail than.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it was actually a very dear friend of mine bought it for me because I was telling her that I was really kind of struggling because my oldest has ADHD and he has trouble. He'll lie just compulsively. There's no reason to do it. He just does it. And just a lot of other things that I was just really struggling with. So she surprised me, bought it for me, and I immediately started reading it. And there are so many times I've been moved almost to tears because I feel like I'm having a glimpse at my own life and my relationship with my son.
What a beautiful thing for an author to be able to touch your heart in such a way.
Right, right. So a little background, this book is written from two perspectives, from the mother and her son. And so they kind of wrote it together, and the son gives his perspective. He has a myriad of, I guess, learning disabilities. He has ADHD, OCD, And there's something called ODD, which is like obstinate defiant.
Oppositional defiance disorder. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So they just had a whole slew of things to kind of overcome. And they'll write specific instances, you know, we'll get the son's perspective of what he was feeling, what he was thinking, and then the mom's perspective. And it just, it reads my life in so many ways.
Okay. Okay.
So,
and this is by Sally Clarkson.
It
right?
is.
What's the name of the book? Actually, do you want to flash it on the screen? And
okay. Yep. It's called Different.
Okay.
And yeah, it's so good. And I just, I actually am only 4 chapters in and I'm already raving about it. So I'll share what I've read thus far.
Okay.
And I hope that other people can kind of benefit, from it. And so, again, I highly recommend pick up this book. It's a very easy read. But a couple things that really kind of stood out to me, is the main point is most of the time our children cannot help it, especially those with ADD, you know, like dyslexia, all those things, they can't help it. So it really does no good for us, as hard as it is, it doesn't do much good for us to get upset and, you know, try and push them in a different direction when they just simply cannot. And so I think that's the biggest thing, is just realizing that. And then from there, a lot of healing and growth can happen.
Right. Hey, I'm just, this is a quote that my daughter had used. Her first baby was a quite a fussy, sensitive baby. And I'm not sure where she read it. I should ask her. But the quote was, your baby's not being a problem. Your baby's having a problem.
Yeah.
Right. And there's such a world of difference between those two phrases that I think it was just something that really resonated with me. And I thought, oh, that would have been something I'd had up on my fridge, you know, when I was raising little kids, because so often we think you are such a problem, right? That's what's going through our mind. You are such sure. a pain to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So recognizing that they can't help it. That's important. Right.
Right.
You're not trying to annoy you.
No.
Yeah.
So the next thing that kind of goes along with this is kind of realizing that we as parents should be investing in their hearts, and that is a very simple goal, is just investing in their hearts. And sure, it can be taxing at times, but overall it requires very little of us just to, you know, invest in their hearts and really work on those heart related things.
Simple, but not easy. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And then, so one tip that really helped in terms of focus with your children, like getting them to focus on school, is kind of figuring out what works for them. And one thing that my son, when we do read alouds or something, he'll always ask, you know, can you rub my back? And sometimes I will, sometimes I won't. Part of me is kind of like, is this weird? But he's still young, you know, his love language might be physical touch. And so just simply affording him that is good. And so one thing Sally Clarkson learned was that scratching her son's back while he was doing work helped him focus. So the next day after I read this, I tried it. We were working on a language arts lesson and my son was just goofy. He couldn't sit still. And I just simply started rubbing his back and it was like, focus. He finished his lesson. He did not get goofy or ridiculous. He was able to complete it.
It grounds him.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So yeah. Finding something that kind of helps your child to, you know, ground themselves and focus, you
right.
know. She gave another example of read aloud time. You know, it's very hard for any kid to really sit still, even harder for those with, you know, ADD, ADHD.
Yeah.
And so figuring out how to help them focus. So her example was she gave him paper and pencils and, you know, just said, I want you to draw the characters we're reading about.
Right.
And he was able to really listen and focus and understand what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
When you're talking about having multiple kids at the table too, as you're trying to read them or at the couch or whatever, wherever you're reading, I think that that's a super helpful thing just from a tactile perspective. That was a lesson learned for me early on, was that it was really important that my kids were doing something while I read to them, right? Mm-hmm. Some of them would draw pictures. Some of them would play Play-Doh. My boys would take little Playmobil guys and just line them up and, you know, have little Playmobil scenes. And, you know, part of our brain is thinking, well, they're not paying attention because they're not sitting there quietly watching you read, right?
Right.
But they could pay attention better if their hands were busy. And I'm like that myself. So, mm-hmm. You know, we would just have a little variety of things that were things to do at the table, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So awesome.
I've also tested the theory that they're not really paying attention, because I'll let my sons play with their magnetiles or dinosaurs while I'm reading. And sometimes they'll get really loud and I have to just quiet them down, and I'll ask them, well, what did I just read? And they'll like almost verbatim respond.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I've told this story on the podcast before, but how I learned this was my second daughter was very physically active, and she, I'd be reading and she would literally be doing somersaults and, you know, flips and rolls in there, you know, while I was reading. And I would say, could you just sit still and listen? And she said, Mom, this is how I listen. It's the only way I can listen. Yeah. Right. And I thought, oh, okay.
Right.
So, you know, luckily, you know, not everybody needed that, but, you know, definitely tactile things was super important.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Am I going too fast? Is this working well?
I don't think so. I think it's working great.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm trying to refer back and forth in the book because I took little notes.
How it's playing out in your life. It's fantastic for us to know that, right?
Yeah. And I think it would be prudent to also include that, that a lot of this, we need God's help and prayer, you know, to really kind of discern our roles and our relationships. And so the next thing I just wanted to share is that that what Sally Clarkson experienced in her own prayer to God, and just realizing that God is giving us these children as gifts, and we need to accept them for who they are and, you know, just look at them as blessings in our life because that's what they are.
Yeah.
And it's kind of easy to forget that because we, we're for the most part mature adults and, you know, we've learned to overcome all of our, you know, caveats and our, you know, oddities, I guess, to fit in better. But we can't expect our kids to be there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Years ago, Albert read a quote, and it was, hold on, I'm going to have to pull it up from my foggy little brain. It's our kids come into the world unsocialized, right? It's our job to socialize them. Yep. Right. And that's why we see cultural differences, you know, because different social mores are different in every place, and even within every family, you know. And so if we think about it, okay, that's our job to socialize them, to kind of teach them how to be, right? Because they wouldn't know that if they were raised by a pack of wolves, they would act like wolves, right?
Right.
So it's not innate, you know, it's learned behavior. And, you know, so it's important for us to recognize that, you know. But that was a quote he would often say to me if I was frustrated with the kids. He would say, remember, it's our job to socialize.
Right.
Okay. Right. And me being ratty with them isn't going to help socialize anybody, is it? Right.
Right.
Teach them how to be ratty.
Right. Right. And I think I've shared this. My CrossFit coach really helped me because he told me, Elizabeth, you can't force your son to conform and fit in society if he's a little different, you know, because what you're going to end up doing is making him miserable, you know. Yeah. Let him kind of be wild and free, and, you know, who says he has to fit in with everything?
Yeah.
And that has really helped me just think in those terms.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, okay. So what, Now, have you shared as much as you would like to share about her book? Or do you have more to share with us?
I have just a little more.
Okay, because I think when you're done, I think in a couple of episodes, whenever you're done the book, we should come back to it. Yeah. And kind of share, because I think it is exploring a lot of areas of frustration for parents, and it'd be interesting to see how that's also played out for you.
Right, right. Yeah. And hopefully I'll be a little bit more organized.
Organized is overrated.
I think like two more points I just wanted to share is when we realize that we don't have to solve all of our children's problems at once, there's a good sense of freedom that comes with that. And especially when we know that God's going to be with us every step of the way. And again, this is coming from Sally Clarkson. I'm not taking credit for these thoughts. She's just helped me.
Wisdom. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So sometimes that just means we have to change our own expectations, to kind of help our children more. So the last thing I really wanted to share was a story that she had shared. Her son shared his perspective, and then she followed up. And so what happened was her son, they moved into a new home, and he had his room. And without asking, he completely just painted it like this mural of just all these colors. And he kind of shares his thought process that he finished and he felt so proud, but he also knew he'd have to tell his parents.
Right.
And
how old is he? Just so we know, how old is he?
I think he was in his teens, like 15. Okay. I could be wrong, but you know, he was old enough to kind of be able to do it.
Right. Yeah.
But he knew that he had to show them because they'd see it anyway. And it was just sort of like, okay, I could either get in trouble or they could love it. And right. It's kind of too late now. So either way, I get to keep it up. and so he called his mom down, and she just kind of opened the door and kind of looked stunned for a minute and then said, "It's beautiful." And it almost made me start crying, because I cannot count how many times my son has wanted to show me something, and I look at whatever he's done and it's really a beautiful thing, but he broke rules to do it, you know, like use right. tape without asking, or left a mess, or, you know, just all this yeah. kind of stuff. And I almost cried, because I felt ashamed of myself to be so yeah. concerned about these rules that, I mean, so what, he uses tape, you know, why do we have that rule of, you yeah. know, not using tape without yeah. asking.
It's important to question your rules, right?
Yeah.
And to
yeah.
be reasonable, you know, and especially if our kids ask, well, why, you know, why can't I do X, to be able to say, gee, you know, maybe I should think about why we don't do that. You know, maybe yeah. when you were two, it was a good rule, but maybe it's not anymore. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Well, I just wanted to share this quote, 'cause it's just yeah. so powerful. She had looked, it's, she said that it seemed that God whispered to her in that moment that this is important to her son. He is revealing something profoundly important to him, an unusual, fervent, and generous expression of who he really is.
Wow.
And so again, I felt ashamed thinking of all those instances where my son has shown who he really is. And I, you know, I'm like, you shouldn't have done that. You know, and so
but they're learning moments, right? They're
right.
learning for you, right? They're learning moments for you, you yeah. know, and parenting comes with a lot of guilt, you know, but it's, if she can give you permission to not feel guilt too about those things, that you can just celebrate, right?
Right.
You know, that's a big deal.
Right. Right?
You know, so it's not only going to help your son, it's going to help you too, right?
Right. Well, and you know, half the time it feels like, you know, it's trial and error, but I feel like, do I have time to really try and fail so many times? You know, it's my son's life. He's, you know, almost 9. He's only going to be with us however many more years, you know, at home. And so it just feels like time is slipping by and I've got to figure it out soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this story in case I can't remember if I've told it before, but it's something that's so profound for me that I often refer to this, especially at conferences, if I'm giving a talk or something. that one day I was sitting in the living room with my three adult daughters. We were just sitting around having tea a few years ago. And I was kind of lamenting the fact that they didn't get as good of a mom as their younger siblings got, right? Because you have more time in, you have more practice, you start to sort better what's important and what's not important. You know, you kind of streamline what, you know, what's worth fussing about and what isn't, and you know, those kinds of things, right? And I was feeling a bit sad about that, you know, they didn't get the best of me in that way. And my oldest daughter said, you know, Mom, but we got to watch you trying to be a better mother, right? And we knew you were trying. And oh, it just makes me cry to think about it, because right. It was such a beautiful thing for me to hear and to know that she experienced, that she watched me trying, mm-hmm. right? And your son will be watching you, and he will know that you're gaining traction and becoming a better mother, because we can't be the best mother that we are with our first child. It's not possible. We don't have the time in. Yeah. Right. And so, you know, but I like to share that, because I think, okay, how often are our kids watching us and thinking, boy, my mom is handling that differently than she handled that with me. Good for her.
Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
In a loving environment, that's what they're going to think. If they're all defensive mode with you, then they're going to be thinking, oh, well, you know, look how she spoils that kid. But, you know, if you have a good relationship with them, they're going to be thinking the best of you the same way that you do of them. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, and being a parent, you know, especially as a mom, you know, we give of ourselves, we give of our bodies when we carry our babies in our, you know, in our stomachs. And we give of ourselves when we're up sleepless nights trying to calm and comfort, you know, whether it's sick kids or scared kids or whatever it is. And then it just doesn't end. And hopefully this equates to straight shot to heaven.
Well, and the other thing too is that it doesn't end when your kids become adults either, right?
Right.
Still, you know, you want to make yourself, I mean, you could end it. You could just say, okay, you're on your own now, you know, but that's not what most of us want. You know, right. We want to be a conduit of grace for them, you know, even in their married life, right? Mm-hmm. That we can pray for them, we can support them, we can be there for them, you know, so yeah, so it's a beautiful thing.
Right. And, you know, I see glimpses of, you know, the hard work that I've been trying to put in to help my kids. And, I'll share this story. My son started, mixed martial arts, at my CrossFit gym. And so their coach is actually my coach too. And, my 6-year-old, was really nervous, and he was telling me days before, I really don't want to do this. I'm really shy, you know, and my son, my 6-year-old, has this fear of failure. And right. I think he gets it a lot from me. I'm very black and white. It's, you know, you either do it correctly or you are a failure. And so unfortunately, I have somehow passed this along to my 6-year-old. And I told him, I said, look, you know, I want you to be involved in things. I want you to give this a try. You know, you when things get hard, you tend to want to quit, and you've got to put in time before you can, you know,
Pass
on it. And so we went to the class, and he did fine during the warm up and everything. And then the coach paired him up with a kid he didn't know. And so I'm, you know, on the sidelines watching, and I just see my son, it almost was like a physical reaction. I just saw him just kind of curl up into this ball of, I can't. Right. And luckily my coach caught on pretty quick. And so he made my oldest pair up with him.
Right.
But it was too far gone. And so my son just couldn't function.
Yeah.
And so he gave up that day. And so Monday was his next class. And I told him, I was like, you know, it's hard, but you've got to be brave. I know you're shy, but you can do it. And I was giving him words he could use, because usually it's when he doesn't understand something,
right?
You know, and he doesn't have the words to say that. So I was telling him, you know, say, can you show me that again? Or I don't understand, or, you know, right. I'm uncomfortable, whatever it is. And, so he went into class, and he, afterwards, he was like, I did it. I didn't cry. You know, it was great. And then his brother was like, yeah, he actually did better than me.
Aw, so nice, eh?
Right. But yeah. I'm sharing that because my oldest, the whole time, was very compassionate towards his brother. He was nice. Trying to say, Henry, you know, stand like this or do this, or it's okay if you need to go to mom. And I just saw the work I've put in and my husband has put in playing out in the compassion that he was showing his brother.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a question. So because a lot of this question was about lying, have you read anything that she's commented on directly about lying?
Not yet. I know that in my own experience, that's something that is kind of a compulsive trait for ADHD.
Right.
I don't know if the mom that submitted this question has stated whether or not she knows that is, you know, part.
She hasn't stated that. I know that this particular child she's talking about is 5. Okay. But I think maybe sort of addressing that directly would be a good idea. And if, you know, she has more, Sally Clarkson has more to say about that in let's, you know, sort of revisit that topic with her perspective on it. When we sort of go over the rest of the book, when you're done it,
I think
it would be a good idea. Or, you know, if you happen to read a part, you know, in one of our next couple of podcasts. So the things that I have sort of gleaned about lying, and I'll be really honest with you, the lying wasn't a big issue in my own family. My kids tended to not be sneaky and not lie, and not that we never experienced it. Of course we did to a small degree, and they weren't perfect angels by any stretch, right? It's just that for whatever reason, and I don't know what it is, I would love to think it's something wonderful I did, but I don't think so. it was just not something we dealt with a lot. Okay, so I've been sort of doing some reading on it because the question has come up more than once, you know, what about lying, because it's a difficult thing. And so I realized when I was sort of reading through these ideas about lying, was some of them I automatically did instinctively. And so maybe that was one of the factors in why it wasn't something we experienced a lot. And so one of them, I think, first of all, it's really important to kind of separate telling tall tales. Mm-hmm. Or bragging about something that you did, or you know, sharing some fantastical story about what you did, as opposed to lying to deceive. Okay. Right. It's really important to make that distinction, because the tall tales, I think, is something pretty easily dealt with, you know, because kids developmentally go through that. They want to tell stories. They want to have imagination. Now, they might stick to their guns. Like if you called them on it, you know, well, that's not true, or you didn't actually see that. That then it becomes a lie in a sense, as opposed to a story, where if we treat it with a light hand, it just is a story, right?
Right.
You know, and so some suggestions that I had been reading about were things like treating it that way. So like, oh man, that's a good one. That we should write that down. You should make a book out of that, you know, or be sure and tell that story to your brother, because that was really good. You know, like sort of treat it. You don't have to say it's not true. Mm-hmm. You don't have to say, you're making that up. Right. Mm-hmm. But we just address it sort of more globally or lightly. You know, that, oh yeah, that is really amazing. You know, that's a great story, right?
Yeah.
And even ask them questions about it. It's like, oh, was the tiger on the mountain? And if they say, yeah, the tiger was on the mountain, you say, wow, I've never seen the mountain in our backyard. You'll have to show me one day. You know, like that, play along with them, but treat it as play, right? And so I think that's a really great idea, and something that we just need to not worry about. Or if they say, you know, I did such and such, you know, like I drove a fire truck, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and well, no, you didn't drive a fire truck. You can't say, you know, you could get into an argument with them.
Right.
Or you could just say, wow, you drove a fire truck? No kidding. Yeah. That must have been an amazing experience for you. Yeah. Did you get any pictures? I'd love to see you in that fire truck. You know what I mean? Play along with them.
Right.
So that they know, you know, it's not true. And at the same time, we don't have to, you know, be pointed about that, right?
Right.
And so one of the other things was, though, that if they're actually lying to deceive you, that can absolutely be a developmental phase, right? Where kids lie and they're kind of testing the waters almost, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and for your son, there's sort of this compulsivity about it, right? That lying, so it's not necessarily to deceive you or to get out of trouble. Mm-hmm. It's just lying kind of to test the waters, right? Sure. And so one of the best pieces of advice that I read was, don't set up a lie for them. Like, don't trap them into a lie. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you said, you know, clean your room, and you know, an hour later you said, have you cleaned your room? And they said, yeah, I cleaned my room. You know darn well they didn't. Don't say, have you cleaned your room, if you know they haven't. Mm-hmm. Right? Go to the room with them and say, oh, wow, look at this mess here. Mm-hmm. Right? This has to be dealt with. What are we going to do about this? Yeah. Right? As opposed to trapping. Do you see what I mean? Like, sort of, yeah, like trapping them into a lie or backing them into a corner so that, you know, in a sense, they feel, you know, they have to make a choice whether they're going to lie or not lie. Right? Mm-hmm. And so that's important for us to sort of not trap them. Now, for sure, the idea of like humiliating them or yelling at them or punishing them, you know, is not going to be helpful, right? You know,
right.
And again, like all heated things, if we're really reactive to lying, that's just going to go down badly. If they actually directly lie to us to, for whatever reason, whether it's compulsively, whether it's to avoid, you know, getting in trouble or something like that, or to manipulate you in some way, some kids can be, you know, lie to manipulate, that, you know, we can say something kind of neutral, like, you know, this is kind of a problem here, but we'll, you know, we'll deal with that in a little while. Right now we have to deal with the whatever. Maybe there's nothing to even deal with, but you know, we have to talk about this, but not in the heat of the moment, right? Again, removing ourselves from that heat of the moment where it's rare, they've pushed your buttons because they're lying. Wait until you feel calm, right? So that you can, the whole point of that is to keep the relationship intact. When we're reactive, we undermine the relationship, you know, and just going back to what Sally Clarkson said earlier about, you know, what was the quote about their heart?
Well, investing in his heart required so little. Is that what you're talking about?
Right. Yeah. Investing in their heart. And so what that means in those circumstances, when our kids are really ticking us off or pushing our buttons, because it does push our buttons to have them lie to us.
Right.
Is we invest in the relationship by not reacting. Yeah. Right. So sometimes investing is actually investing. Sometimes investing is self-control.
Yeah.
Right. And so we invest in that because we're not making a big fuss, a big deal about this thing. Yes, absolutely. We need to talk about it. We need to deal with it, but that can wait.
Yeah.
You know, so we have an opportunity here to say, you know, this is a problem. You know, but we'll talk about this a little bit later. Right now, we just need to say they've made a mess or spilled something and not told you, or broken something and not told you. Let's deal with this right now.
Yeah.
Could you help me? You know, or can I help you? Your room isn't done. We need to get your room done. So do you need some help with that? So I can help you, you know, and then, you know, you have a completely, in many circumstances, completely sidestep the opportunity for them to lie, especially if you know they're inclined to lie, right? To phrase things in such a way that they're not backed into a corner, right? And so I think that's one of the really big tools that we could use. Are there any circumstances that you sort of think of with your son where he's lied, so we can sort of talk about, okay, how we could respond to that? Because it would probably help other parents to bring up particular circumstances.
Yeah, I can think of one off the top of my head. But before I do that, I also want to add one thing I've learned is I have to take a look at my rules that I have.
Yeah.
And my reactions when those rules are broken, because I think that also tends to lead to the lying. You know, if I'm responding, like overdoing my, you know, response to something very small, then that's also leading them to potentially lie more frequently than if I, you know, just said, look, these are our rules. I don't like that you did that. You know, let's work on that next time. You know, like just kind of brush it off more than just having those immediately big reactions.
Yeah.
Really does, I think, lead to more lying.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that was one of the things I was reading too, is that, you know, if we overreact, it's a guarantee they're going to lie more because they want to avoid that. Mm-hmm. And so they think they're going to, you know, somewhere in their psyche, they're thinking, oh, well, if I don't want to tell the truth. Oh, and another thing about just about truth is, no matter how bad it is, do not get mad at kids when they tell the truth.
Right.
So if they've made a big mess, you know, and, you know, spilled orange juice or broke a glass or whatever, and tried to, you know, didn't tell you about it. And if you say to them, you know, do you know what happened here? And they say, I spilled the orange juice, but I didn't say anything because I thought you'd get mad. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you say, well, for the cry out loud, now it's all dried up, you know, and how am I supposed to clean it up now? If you told me right away, I could have cleaned it, blah, blah, blah. That's exactly what they were trying to avoid. Mm-hmm. Right. So if they tell the truth, as frustrating as the truth might be, we need to say, thank you for telling me the truth. You know, if you tell me right away, I promise I'll try really hard not to get mad. You know, sometimes situations are frustrating, but I'll really work on that, right. You know, and if you just tell me right away, and then we can deal with the mess right away so nobody gets hurt or whatever the circumstances are.
Right.
You know, so that's one thought.
And I will say that, despite the compulsivity of lying that goes on with my kids, when it's a big thing, they always come and tell us. One of our rules is don't climb up on the counters. If you need a plate or something, we're there to help. Yeah. And the reason why is, you know, they could get hurt. They could, you know, stepping onto cabinet doors can lead to them breaking.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was, I think, holding a sleeping baby or something, and my then 5-year-old came to me crying, and he goes, I broke the cabinet door. And I was like, what? And he brings me the door that not only had broken off the hinges, but it was somehow completely in half. And I was like, what? And I go in, and I said, well, what were you doing? And he goes, I climbed on the counter. And what happened was, he was climbing down and kind of slipped and just hit the cabinet door in a way that it just shattered it, basically.
Hurt him too.
Yeah. And, you know, I did say, you know, thank you for telling me that. I know it was hard for you. Yeah. And this is also why we say not to climb on the counters, you know.
Absolutely. Reiterate the rule, right?
Right. You
know, I mean, that's a great teachable moment.
Yeah. And let me tell you, they did not learn their lesson because they still climb on the counters.
What is that about?
I think it's, you know, just wanting that independence. And so now I just remind them, what happened last time this happened?
I had a friend of mine who, when I met them the first time, their son was about 4, and he was a climber. He climbed everything, right? And so he would just drag chairs all around the house and climb anywhere he wanted to climb. And, you know, I mean, she had babies and whatnot, so it was tricky. So she had all her dining room chairs tied with ribbon to the table. I thought, this is brilliant. You know, they only had about a 3-foot range, just enough to pull them out.
Yeah.
If you have climbers, tie your chairs.
That's a good idea. My kids climb the door jams, though.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. My boys used to do that.
Yep.
Yeah, Spider-Man style.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't mind that. But you would ask me if I had any instances of lying. And I can think of one, and I actually still don't know who did it. So on the door frame, I saw my second son's name written in pencil, and it just said Henry. And, you know, of my 3 boys, only 2 of them can write.
Right.
And only 2 of them can spell Henry. And so I was like, who did this? Neither one of them would fess up to it. And still to this day, I don't know who did it. And it doesn't really look like Henry's handwriting. I don't know. So they both lied to me about it. And one thing I always tell them is the action is really not what gets you in trouble. It's the lying. If you lie to me about it, you're going to get in more trouble, you know? And like usually in the moment I'll say, I'm just asking because I'm going to tell you not to do that. I'm not going to yell at you.
Right.
You know? But now you might get yelled at because you lied on top of it. So that's my example for you that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah. Cause I mean, sort of how do we work that around or, you know, I mean, maybe we could say, you still might not get to the bottom of it. Right. But we could say, oh, look at this, you know, there's a word written on the wall.
Yeah.
And now I have to deal with that. So how about you guys get out your, I'll give each a little scrub brush and I don't know who did this, but you can both just help me clean it up.
Yeah.
Right. And deal with the problem. And then maybe in some way, like that evening or something, say, you know, explain to them why honesty is important, right? Mm-hmm. Honesty builds trust. And, you know, we want to trust you. We want you to trust us. We're honest with you. And, you know, it's important that you're honest with us and just leave it at that.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, that might be one way of dealing with it. Right.
Yeah.
Sort of avoiding the who did this and just saying, you know, oh, look at this.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess you both just can help me scrub this off.
Right.
My son, when he was about four, we moved into the house we live in now, and his name's Isaac. And so I was on our stairwell. There was this great big letter I, right? And then there was a couple of I's written down the stairwell. And I said, Isaac, I said, why did you put I's on the stairwell? And he goes, how did you know? Nobody else's name starts with an I, does it?
Right. Yeah. No, I don't know about anybody else, but only Henry so far has written his name in so many places. He's written it on the door, like next to his seat in the car, like underneath the window. He's written it in one of his brother's toys. You know, his name was on the door frame. It could have been him. It could have been Liam, his brother. I don't know who wrote it, but he just... like it's like he's claiming all these things.
One day that will be endearing.
Right. Now, I will say, when my husband has written their names on a part of the wall for measurements, it's kind of setting a bad example. Like, oh, hey, we can write on the wall.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so do you know about magic erasers?
Yes, I do.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, that was a life-changing moment to find magic erasers. They're just these sponges that you wet down and you rub their kind of eraser-ish material, like a porous eraser, and they clean walls like nothing else.
Yeah, they do. I don't know what it is. They also work on, if you have a glass top stove, those with baking soda really take off. Yeah.
I just
found that out and it really does work. It doesn't get like the worst of the, you know, spills, but it really cleans up that glass top.
So Bonnie and Elizabeth's cleaning tips signing off for today. So yeah, I guess we should wrap up.
Yeah.
So hopefully that may generate more questions, but we'll revisit Sally Clarkson in a few more chapters.
Yes.
And see what she has to say. So thank you for sharing that book with us, because it sounds lovely. I really would like to read it.
Yeah, and I am really excited about it. So sorry if I was just overzealous.
We're happy to have that. Okay, so if you have questions or if this episode has spun off more questions in your brains, please forward them to us via Make Joy Normal, my Facebook page, or Make Joy Normal Instagram, or on my website. You can get my emails on my website as well under contact. Okay, God bless.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.